Natural Man is in a Dreadful Condition and What We Can Learn from It by Jonathan Edwards. We may learn the stupidity and sottishness of many natural persons. If we consider the things which we have now heard concerning their dreadful condition, and then see how the greater part of natural man behaved themselves, we may well be astonished that there should be such stupidity in the heart of man. If we rightly considered it, we should be ready to cry out with astonishment. Their sottishness appears in the following things. 1. That though they are in such a dreadful condition, they can go about easy and quiet, and in little or no concerns respecting it. What might rationally be expected of such persons, if it were a new thing to us, and we had heard there was a person in a particular town or country, of such a name, who was in this awful condition, who had no interest in his Creator, who had the wrath of Almighty God abiding on him, that wrath which is great and terrible enough to make him miserable with devils in hell to all eternity, that he was a captive in the hands of the devil, was made his slave, and was under his power and dominion, that his soul was a habitation of devils, that he was condemned to be cast into the lake that burns with fire and brimstone, to drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out without mixture into the cup of his indignation, and to suffer in an inexpressible and conceivable extremity in both soul and body forever and ever without hope or end, to be liable to sink in this misery every day, and the longer he continued out of it, the worse his condition, the more dreadful the wrath, and the hotter the flames of hell. I say, supposing we had just now for the first time heard there was a person in this awful condition, how should we expect to see him behave himself? If he was in the exercise of his reason, should we not expect to see him trembling and quaking on account of his misery, with all the manifestations of continual terror and amazement, regardless of all things else, spending his days and nights in tears and groans and lamentations, crying for pity and help, crying out to everyone to pity him and pray for him? Yea, how many are there in this dreadful condition, are easy and quiet, and appear to have nothing to trouble them, to go about the world without anxiety or alarm, as if they had no more reason to be disquieted than if they had already secured their salvation, though they're told how dreadful their condition is hundreds of times? Their tranquility is wholly undisturbed. They can sit and hear of its certainty and its nearness, of its dreadful nature and its inconceivable degree, and then can go away with as quiet and easy hearts as they had before. There is no moving them by telling them of such things. They can sleep as quietly and go about their business with perfect unconcern. They can eat and drink and enjoy the pleasures of social life with no apparent load on their minds, and without being sensible of anything in their circumstances which had hindered them from such enjoyment. And not only so, but they can go about with a merry heart. There are many of them who not only seem to be quiet in their minds, but they are very cheerful, as if all were well with them, and everything smiled upon them, as if they were in happy circumstances and had everything as they desired, and are even disposed to be merry and sportive about their own condition and the dreadful realities of the future world. For their part, they choose to take their ease and pleasure and not disturb or molest themselves with such dark and melancholy thoughts, like the persons mentioned by Isaiah in Isaiah 56:12. "Come you," say they, "I will fetch wine, and we will fill ourselves with strong drink, and tomorrow shall be as this day, and much more abundant." They are so senseless that they do not think it worth their while to make any considerable effort to escape from this dreadful condition. They will not take half so much pains for it as for a little worldly gain, and they do not think it worth a while even to ask God to deliver them from it. Do you think it too much labor to withdraw once or twice each day to ask God to be merciful to them, that they might not continue in their natural state, and they foolishly neglect the precious opportunities which they enjoy to get into a better state? God gives them great advantages for it, and they are called upon and warned and exhorted to improve them. They are told what good opportunities they have and the danger of letting them slip. But all is to no purpose. These persons will let slip the time of youth, which is a precious season to escape from their natural condition, so they will let slip a time of the moving of God's Spirit in the place where they live. They act as if they had a wish to continue in the same state. They will put themselves a little out of the way to escape from it. They are so backward to deny themselves a little, or to make a little effort. They seem to grudge it, and think it needless. If they have a great advantage put into their hands, it is to no purpose. They had as good be without it as with it, for they have no heart to improve it. Proverbs 17:16. Wherefore is there a price in the hand of a fool to get wisdom, seeing he has no heart to it? Instead of using means to get into a better state, they are willfully doing those things which make it worse and worse. Instead of striving for deliverance, they are striving against it. They are provoking God more and increasing their guilt, and hardening their hearts and setting themselves further and further from conversion. And as too, when they are told that the things which they practice have this tendency, they act as if they wish to be sure never to be converted. Thus it is with innumerable multitudes. So exceedingly senseless and stupid are many natural persons. Hence we need not wonder that we are directed in Scripture to strive and be very, very earnest to be delivered from our natural condition. This is the direction which God gives us from time to time. Luke 13:24. Strive to enter in at the straight gate. Matthew 11:12. The kingdom of heaven suffers violence. Ecclesiastes 9:10. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. 2 Peter 1:10. Give diligence to make your calling and election sure. Hebrews 6:18. Flee for refuge to lay hold upon the hope set before us. The direction which was given to Lot relating to his flight out of Sodom was designed for the direction of all who are in a natural condition. Genesis 19:17. Escape for your life. Look not behind you, neither stay thou in all the plain. Escape to the mountain, lest you be consumed. This doctrine shows us a reason why persons should be directed in such a way as this to seek their salvation. But it is such a dreadful condition as reason enough why persons should thus vehemently strive and be violent to get into a better state, and why they should haste for their lives and flee from the wrath to come. If the case of natural men be as we have heard, no wonder that they should have such advice given them, and that God expects that the pains which they take and the endeavors they use for it should be in some measure answerable to its importance. No wonder that the jailer, when made sensible of his condition, should conduct himself as we have the account in the text. No wonder that he should be in such a haste as not only to run in, but to spring or leap in to the place where Paul and Silas were, and fell down before them and asked in such an earnest manner, "What must I do to be saved?" If he had not been indeed in a dreadful state, he would have acted like one distracted. But considering that he was in a natural condition, which is so dreadful, it was not the least wonder. Hence we may learn how dismal are the effects which a fallen man has brought on the world. It has brought all mankind into this dreadful condition of which we have heard. The far greater part of those who live in this world are in this state, and the greater part of those who die in the world die in this state. What a miserable world, therefore, is the world in which we live. This world lies under a curse. God has denounced woe against it, and what an immeasurable amount of woe is brought upon it. What woeful devastation has sin made in the world. What has been said of the dreadfulness of their condition may well awaken and terrify the impenitent. How many things are there in your circumstances which are awful and terrible to think of? There's no one of these things which have been mentioned, but that the thought of it may well be frightful to you. It may well be a dreadful thought that you have no goodness in you, nor have you ever done anything which has the least goodness in it, that you never exercise one act of love or true thankfulness or obedience to God in your life, nor ever did the least thing out of true respect to God. The consideration of the dreadful depravity and wickedness of your heart may well be frightful to you to think what a sink of corruption it is, how full of all manner of wickedness, how full of enmity against God. To think that there are the same corruptions in your heart is in the heart of the devil, and that there are the seeds of the same enmity against God, that you are in the very image of the devil. If you look into your own heart and strictly examine what it would entice you to do, if all restraints of fear and self-interest were taken off, it might well affright you. How awful may the thought well be to you, when you consider that you are a creature separated from your Creator, that there is an alienation between you and that great being in whom you live and move and have your being, that you are a poor, desolate creature, that have no God to protect you and guide you and provide for you in the world, and that you are secure from no manner of mischief into which human nature is capable of falling either in soul or body. How terrifying should it be to you to think how good, how mighty and terrible that God is, under whose wrath you lie down and rise up and eat and drink and engage in the daily business of life. How frightful should it be to you when you consider in what relation you stand to the devil, that you are his child, and that he owns you, that you are his servant, his possession, and that your heart is dwelling in place, that you are without Christ and so without hope and have no good thing in another world in which you have any inheritance. And how amazing may it well be to you when you consider how great that future misery is to which you are exposed and condemned, wherein God shows his wrath and makes his power known, and the destruction of the ungodly, in which there are vessels of wrath filled to the brim, and that you are in danger of being plunged in a bottomless gulf or deluge of wrath, where mighty waves and billows of wrath shall pass over you. And when you consider the torment of your body in that great furnace of fire, where every part, every organ, every vein, and every limb shall be filled full of fire, and yet full of quick sense, and that this torment shall remain to an endless duration, a duration which shall always be beginning but never ending, and how well may it affright you and strike a terror upon you, when you consider that if you die in your present condition, it is as impossible that you should escape this misery, as that God should cease to be just and true, and the greater part of those who are in your condition will suffer this misery, but you have no security that shall keep you from it one day or one hour. How terrifying may it be to you when you consider how much more dreadful your ease continually grows. How frightful may it be to you every night when you sit down and consider how much greater your guilt is and how much deeper your condemnation is than it was in the morning.